Hi, everybody. This is Jen Plank. Super, super awesome to have Chris Sorby. Like, I can't think of too many other ladies in the industry that I would put before Chris Sorby for to listen to her for a little bit. But what's cool about Chris Sorby is when you like get to know her, she literally is so kind and giving and loving. I can remember I had met her a couple times. She had taught in a salon that we were in, and she was brilliant and amazing. And just as far as facilitation goes, it's very eloquent and graceful, and she knows her stuff. And then every now and then she'll pepper in like some funny that you don't expect, which is like so great. But I can remember one time where Chris, it was like a random act of kindness, you know. To her, it was probably nothing. But to me, it just was like, oh my God, I can't believe that Chris Sorby just did that. Lacey and I had wandered into an awards show somewhere along the road, and we had seen our salon owner was sitting with Ruth Roach and Chris Sorby and like a group of really amazing artists, and kind of waved us over and said, well, you know, you guys, you can sit on the floor. You can sit right here, sit on the floor. And we were like, oh my God, it's so awesome. Like, I can't believe we're going to like sit right here with like all these iconic women. And yes, we will sit on the floor. Thank you so much. And we sat on the floor, and Chris Sorby hadn't turned around yet to see us. And the first thing she did when she turned around was say hello to both of us, and in such a kind way. And then immediately slid over and lifted me up off the floor and said, oh, you're not going to sit on the floor. You're going to sit right here with me. And then wrapped her arm around me and like sat there with me on her chair with her arm around me so that I could sit among literally the like iconic legendary people. And she just shared her chair with me, and it was just a moment that I think it just felt like normal to her, but to me it was like such a huge gesture from such an amazing woman. And then I got to spend a little bit of time with her actually this spring. Redken invited me to come to the exchange for the 2019 symposium planning, and I got to spend 3 days with their team, and that means 3 days with, yes, you guessed it, Chris Sorby. And she actually pulled me aside and asked me what my story was and took the time to really get to know me. And so I think Chris Sorby is definitely someone that we all think is like such a huge, huge role model for any stylist, mentor, leader, coach, artist. But honestly, she's one of the kindest women I've ever met in the industry. So truly beautiful on the inside and out. Like mad, mad love for Chris Sorby.
Hey, hey, welcome to your day off. My name is Corey. Of course, I'm sitting next to my bud, Tony. What's up, Tony?
What's going on, homie?
So, kind of think like we've hit another rung in our ladder of podcasting.
Yeah, I can't wait for July and first week of August. It's going to be epic.
It's going to be some epic times, right?
Yeah, we finish it with, you know, the start of August and the end of July, Legends and Icons. We, you know, we have another one today, and I am excited to get into her story.
I can't wait either. Yeah, it's really cool, right?
Yeah. I mean, she definitely has changed the industry. You know, she makes trends, she leads trends, and she's pretty awesome.
She is pretty awesome. And I mean, as far as leading trends, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean,
we'll get into that too. You
know. So you're telling me to shut up.
No.
You're telling me to shut up and just bring her on, aren't you?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Hello, Miss Chris Sorby. Thank you very, very much for joining us on your day off.
Hi.
Hey.
Happy to be here. Thank you for the invite.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Truly appreciate you accepting the invitation, and you were definitely one of the ones on our wish list, and you know, and we're slowly conquering them, and with each one, I mean, we're just, you know, in awe of, you know, the people that, you know, that we're interviewing that has changed the industry.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I hope I was at the top of your list.
Number one, Chris.
So
you played a little hard to get.
Absolutely, that's a woman's prerogative.
That's right.
That's awesome.
So, Miss Chris Sorby, can you where are you from?
I was born in London and raised in London, in England. because I believe there's another London in Canada. I wanted to be a hairdresser from the age of 7. So I really didn't think it was worth me going to regular school anymore. But my mother wouldn't have any of it. So you know, I had to wait and finish. And yeah, it was something that immediately hit me. My mum was having a perm in a salon. And so that I would get out of the hairdresser's way, Mr. Squire gave me this massive, great, it was massive because I was little at the time, book to have a look at. And I was looking at pictures of these hairdos where hairdressers were on ladders and they were putting ships into the hair. And I was like, oh, this is better than playing with my dolls. So really, that was the start of it. And incredibly so, after 50 years of being in the industry, I still love it as much as I did on that first day. Only now I hopefully have a little more experience.
Hopefully. So did your dollies end up with like ships in their hair?
They ended up with no hair.
Every good dolly should.
Right. That's when you knew you were ready for my dolly.
Except my one. Except my dolly.
That's right.
So I'm still playing with dolls.
Nothing's changed, right? After 50 years, you're still grabbing the dolls.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That is awesome.
So in England, how does it work? Like, are there like schools or an apprenticeship? Or what was your journey kind of like into our world?
Well, you don't actually have to have any formal training at all. But if you want to apply to work in a salon as an apprentice, then it's usually around a 3-year apprenticeship, or that's what it was then. And I chose, let me rephrase that. I didn't choose to go to college to do it, but my mum made me do that. She said, you're either going to do this properly or not at all. So I went to what's called a polytechnic, which is, it's like one down from a university, right. And it was an intense 2-year course, which involved barbering. It involved every skill set, like wig making, like massage and everything. So I was very, very blessed, actually, to have that intense education that was on a, you know, for a full-time 2 years. And at the same time, I was working in a salon every minute I could and absorbing everything that was possible. So it was an amazing, amazing opportunity. And I had maybe one teacher that really believed in me, but I certainly wish that I'd had a mentor at that stage that could guide me in, okay, what do I do after college? What would be the best thing to do? Is it to go and assist somebody and not get paid at all? Or is it to go and do, they call it improving, or they did then. And that you could usually do improving for in a salon for like 2 years. And so I went to this particular salon, which was in Carnaby Street, because I wanted to be where it was all happening, and as you do at 18 years of age. And anyway, within 2 weeks, they had me doing clients, but I was on an apprentice salary. So I went on strike. And it was England.
A girl stands up for herself, right?
That's right.
Oh, hell yeah. And then they didn't, they like, well, you're fired. And I said, well, when do I have to leave? And they said, Saturday. And I was like, okay. So I, in the meantime, I couldn't like sit back and not get plan B into play. So I applied to a salon, which stipulated that they were only guys that work there. And in those days, that I know it's funny, Corey, you're raising your eyebrows like that. But you know, it was England and it was a long time ago, and there was discrimination existed. Thankfully, I don't think so anymore. But so I thought, well, I'm going to be the first girl you're going to be taking on. Yeah, and I have to say, if someone says no to me, that just makes me go into first gear. And anyway, needless to say, I got the job. And I also was offered back the job in the salon in Carnaby Street, and I chose to go to the all-boys salon. And it was incredible. I worked with some amazing people. I became the manager there when I was 22, which was very, very young.
Hold on, hold on. What was it like managing, how many guys? 15 guys?
Seven.
What was it like managing seven guys in a salon, especially in those?
Hell! It was hell.
Do you have any brothers?
No.
So you went in with no experience about how to deal with a dude.
Exactly. And boyfriends weren't kind of anything to go by.
No. So, you managed them completely different, Chris.
Exactly. So I heard. No, it wasn't easy because talk about proving, you know, yourself and earning the right. It took a lot, and it was actually a pretty miserable first 2 years. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I finally won them over and won their respect and grew the business then. I was there for 14 years until actually I met my first husband, Trevor Sorby. And then we kind of joined forces.
That was a dynamic duo right there.
You ain't kidding.
But prior to meeting Trevor and getting married, and you know, you said it was miserable the first 2 years. Did you have any during that time any second guessing of choosing what you were doing?
Absolutely, I was second guessing myself every day, especially the day when I dissolved somebody's hair with highlights. Mm.
Oh.
That wasn't fun. No. But yes, I still second guess myself. I don't think it's something that will ever leave me because I always want to push myself further. I always want to do better. I always want to do more. It's the bigger the challenge, the better it is. And the industry has now changed so much. So of course I'm still second guessing myself. When I came to New York to work for Redken, oh boy, was I second guessing myself.
The reason why I ask that question is because you have so many young hairdressers that I think leave the industry too early. You know what I mean? Once they start second guessing themselves, there's a lot of hairdressers that drop out. In the statistics shows in our industry, only if they stick in. You know, like here, you said you dissolve somebody's hair, right? I mean, we all make mistakes and we all learn and grow from it. You know what I mean? If they can just hold on like a Chris Sorby, one day they could be a Chris Sorby. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
If I could do it, anyone could do it. I feel that the generations that have been behind me are quite a different mentality. And maybe they're being told too much too soon about how fabulous they are. Mm-hmm. So they're getting this kind of warped perspective on what expectations would be of them in the workplace. And my heart goes out to them. And I rack my brains of what's the best way for me to communicate with these people so that I can encourage them, so that I can motivate them, inspire them to hang on in there, because there'll be highs and lows throughout your career. But what a career.
Yeah.
I couldn't have dreamt a better career for myself. I was just going to say, you know, I've traveled the world. I've met thousands and thousands of people and had the opportunity to be in countries I didn't know existed. And what a better life than that?
Oh, that's amazing. That's kind of, I mean, I guess the one common denominator that keeps coming up on our podcast is exactly that. And just how, you know, so many times on the podcast, people have talked about, and you haven't said this, so I'm going to put words in your mouth, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I'm going to be, is that just how this industry has saved so many people. You know, so many people enter this industry and like, yeah, this industry saved me. You know, I kind of think of our generation, at least, you know, it seems like we're a bunch of misfits and we finally found our table, our family. Right.
Right.
So again, it's amazing to me just how much this industry gives to like everybody that wants to put in the work. You know, we all started 2 feet behind our client's head. Every single person we've talked to, with the exception of a couple, have started in the exact same spot. And everybody's, you know, star is different. you know, or everybody's path to the stars is different. And it's amazing. And no matter who you are, if you're, today's your first day on the floor, that entire, you have Chris Sorby or you have whomever that we've talked to, you have that as a guiding light. You know, that's amazing. And you know, who doesn't want to be Chris Sorby? Who doesn't want to be, you know, whomever we've talked to? It's just amazing. It's an amazing career.
I totally agree with you in that hairdressing saves people's lives. And now with the suicide rate going up the way that it is, it's absolutely scary. And I think if only these people went into hairdressing to realize actually that their problems are not as big as maybe they feel that they are. And it's a sad fact. And with hairdressing, because we're surrounded by like-minded people, especially if we work in a salon versus a booth rental, that again is very supportive. And then of course we're speaking to somebody completely different every 45 minutes in our chair. So, you know, irrespective of ourselves, we learn so much about life from all of these different people. Absolutely. And you know, I loved being behind the chair because at the time I was renovating properties and I always had a client who was a plumber or a carpenter or this. And it was wonderful because I didn't have to pay for anything. We just traded.
That's pretty, that is, so, you know, that's a whole nother podcast, Chris.
Right.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry. Lower the tone. For
you. No, you're good. That's awesome. So, Chris, now I think we jump into Trevor, right?
How did you meet Trevor?
Could you rephrase that? How did I meet Trevor? So I was running the salon that I told you about. It was called Shylock's.
The boy salon.
The boy salon, yeah. And by then we had some girls. Okay. And it was 1980, and my boss said to me, "Oh, I think you should go on this course." So I was like, okay, what is it? And he said, oh, it's a guy, Trevor Sorby. Never heard of him. he used to work for Vidal Sassoon. I said, you know what? Those guys have such big egos. I don't think this is for me. So he said, all right, so just go. And after the first day, if you don't like what you're seeing or learning or you're not learning anything, then you don't need to go for the next 2 days. So needless to say, I came home on the end of Monday and I said to my roommate, I said, if ever I get married, it's going to be a guy like Trevor. Little did I know that it was going to be him. And we were together 20 years. And I started assisting him in the times that I could. And it was a long time before our personal relationship developed, right. Which I love that. You know, I love that we had this working relationship and we had a mutual respect, and he's really been probably the greatest influence that I've had in my career. And I would think many, many hairdressers would say the same thing, that that he was absolutely brilliant. In saying that, though, we used to hang out with Anthony Muscolo, and we'd hang out with Keith Harris, we'd hang out with Robert Labetta, so Eugene Suleiman, I mean, Antoinette Binders, I can go on and on and on, because yes, half of these people worked for Trevor. Mm-hmm. And other times, we were just all friends, and we were so close-knit and yet in a healthy competition with each other. And I think that's what really sparked off the hairdressing industry being so recognized globally and coming out of Britain and Scotland.
Imagine being like at that table.
I'm not telling you that is another podcast.
The secrets.
Yeah.
Around the British round table, right? Chris, did you guys like talk? Was it a lot of hair talk there? Because I know, like, when we go out, you know, with our colleagues, you know, it always ends up coming back to hair talk. Not necessarily client talk, but really kind of hair talk. Is that kind of what it was?
For sure. For sure. It was so amazing. Like Trevor would come up with some ideas and then he'd be like, Chris, can you make that? Yes, because as I said, I will never not take up a challenge. So that was how a lot of things got created. I did a book on Trevor of his work. It was very a very visual book, but the words that Trevor did add to the images that were in that book, it's called Visions in Hair, was so poignant. But yeah, we just lived, ate, and breathed hair.
Did you guys have like a round table think tank of creativity? Or
no, it just, we used to go into a studio that we had and just jam on hair or drag out some hair pieces out of the bottom of his session bag and then realize that there was something in that, you know, because it had been in the bottom of the bag for a couple of years. And it's just, you know, I think the hardest part of working alone and trying to be creative as what, you know, people, like if you're going to do a shoot for NAHA or, you know, you want to enter the L'Oreal Awards or whatever it may be, it's very difficult to work alone and not have someone to bounce off of that actually gets it, that you, whose work you respect, who you know is going to be super honest with you to say, you know what, Trevor, that's not working. At which point he would kick the mannequin head or the wig across the studio, which was fine. And then we'd go to the bar. And then in the bar, after a couple of drinks, we'd go back to the studio and talk some more and come up with something that was amazing. So, yeah, it's, as I said, I truly was blessed and I'm very, very grateful to Trevor for everything that we shared.
Awesome. Yeah. I just kind of think, if you kind of just remember the images from like the early 80s, from like, you know, what Trevor was putting out and what Robert was putting out, Robert Labetta. And if you aren't familiar with these names, do yourself a favor and just look at it. I mean, it's, everything has evolved off of these shapes, you know?
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
And again, hairdressing, you know, the word dressing or the word stylist, I think that's back better than ever right now, you know, because I think for so many years, you know, hairdressing was actually lost in our industry. But if you look at what's going on now, like who's that guy in New York? I'm going to mess his name up, aren't I? Mufasa or Mustafa?
I think it's Mustafa. Yeah.
Yeah. He at the NAHA Awards right now. Absolutely. It's all about the dressing, right?
Exactly. So if you need inspiration, go back to and look at what Trevor was doing and look at what Robert Labetta was doing. And I can't believe that happened over like a bar, you know, tall table. It's just amazing. It's just amazing.
Not quite. Not always, but a lot of the time. Yeah. It's usually around at our house.
You have a bar in your house? What?
No. Trevor wanted one, but I wasn't having
it. You weren't having it?
The kitchen table will have to do.
Everybody will be
able. You know, what you were saying about hairdressing, and I think in today's world, that's where a lot of us are lacking the skill set in finishing hair. And now with this social media opportunity, hey, well, like I need to come and teach you, Corey. You raised your hand there. you know, seriously, with social media now and the opportunities to promote our individual brands, it's more important than ever. And when I go into salons to teach, which I absolutely love to do, it's not just, you know, I'll teach a color technique, then we'll do finishing, but we'll do finishing that's social media worthy. And then we do a couple of hours on how to take pictures. Not that I'm a photographer, but I've been in enough shoots to understand, you know, what the basics are about framing, about lighting. And that's what we need educating in, or, you know, what to post, when to post it, what to say, how to interact, how to get a response, who's my audience, all of the above.
That's absolutely brilliant, you know, and it's just amazing. I mean, I'm blown away by this. So you mentioned that, you know, in your classes, you do a few things. Is there anything that you specialized in, or was it, or were you just like a master of all?
The only thing I don't teach is design. I leave that to Chris Barron and Sam Veer. And not that I don't cut hair, because I cut a lot of hair, but but I feel most comfortable doing color and inspiring people to create something for every client as an individual versus, oh, let's do some balayage, but we don't quite know why it doesn't show when we've done it, or where did those money pieces disappear to? Right. You know, and it's all about understanding placement and trying to recreate something that actually is a very natural process by the sun bleaching our hair. And it was a little bit enhanced by the Carita sisters in Paris all those years ago. And I love that it's now come back, but everything comes back with a difference. So we've got to know even more what it is, how to do it. It's about how do you hold your brush? How do you position your body? What's your brush stroke? Where does that stroke come from? Which sounds really stupid because you think, well, I know how to use a color brush. But when it comes to balayage, it's different because the motion is from your elbow to really get that beautiful and seamless sweep of lightener onto the hair. So this is what I love, how the industry has evolved through all the years that I've been working in it and how I can still get excited about everything, regardless of whether, oh, well, that was last year or that was the year before, or, you know, why should I do highlights or whatever.
Is that why you joined Redken, or did you join Redken because of, you know, you just love to teach and the education, or?
That was never in my game plan. I don't, my dreams are never that big, but I got approached by Redken. I did a show for Hair Color USA in 1998 in Florida and won best educator, no, most inspirational educator, and then jointly with David Stanko, I won best educator. And I was blown away because this was actually a show under the Trevor Sorby banner at the time. And little did I know, Redken was sitting in the audience and they invited me to be their global artistic director, which, at which point on the end of the phone, I burst out laughing. And I said, yeah, who is this? How could that happen to me? Simple little Polish girl, parents from the war and all of that. You know, they just, dreams like that don't happen. And on the other end of the phone, this guy said, this is Michael Tongi. I'm the general manager of Redken Worldwide. And we would like to speak with you. And I was like, shit. I'm being invited to go and live in New York and have this title. What does it mean? They'll discover how I'm not really good at what I do, but oh my God, how exciting. This could change my life. I was 46 years old at the time, and Trevor, we'd already split. And I was like, this is insane to be offered something like that, never in my wildest dreams. Although I have to say that for many, many years, I always spoke about living in New York. And now I've lived here almost 19 years. And I still pinch myself to think, really, am I calling this home? How privileged am I?
You can tell by the New York accent.
And you know what? When I go to the UK, I was in England last week. And when I go there, they're like, oh, yeah, where are you from? I'm like, what do you mean, where am I from? They're like, no, you've got this twang. Is it Australia? Or it's hilarious, isn't it? But I'm happy that to you guys, I still sound like a Brit. Right.
She totally lost her British cred.
It's a Brit with a New York attitude. Like, you know, yeah. Talking like...
That's right.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And my mom would have said she needs no more attitude than what she was born with.
Lots of moms say that about their girls. That's incredible, Chris. So I literally got the chills when she said that she got that phone call from Redken. Like, I can't imagine. Like, you, first of all, when she was telling the story, you just kind of watch her eyes relive it. And
oh, like, you can see the beautiful smile. You can see her face light up. Right?
It's amazing. Like, I mean, awesome. You can tell that was.
You know, well, wouldn't your face light up if someone offered you a position in New York?
Chris, my face is lighting up for you. You know, your story. I think it's amazing. Absolutely. You know. It's just so great when you work so hard and you have a whole career and then you continue to get validation, you know, and
Yeah, that really, and you know what that does, like with any of the awards I've ever won, that's just like you got to push the fast button to try even harder, because you're only as good as your last piece of work.
Yeah.
And again, now with social media, it's even more apparent. I, as an educator, I feel a huge responsibility, not just to the person that I'm teaching, but to the industry, because I want the industry to get more recognition, to get more respect from people that are not in our industry, that think that, oh, we just work behind a chair and, you know, tra-la-la, get lots of tips. They don't realize the physical suffering that we go through as we age because of the work that we do. They don't realize that we have to have bigger insurance, medical insurance, especially in this country, to be able to accommodate all the aches and pains and arthritis and whatever else it is we're going to have. But this is, we deserve more. And I know you two are boys, but I really feel that women are not still to this day, not getting the recognition and the equality that guys get in our industry.
Well, I mean, we were in Premiere a couple of weekends ago, and we were talking to a lot of women about this whole movement, right? This positive woman's movement, and, you know, with Elizabeth Fay, with,
Wheeler.
Yeah, I mean, all these guys that we're totally on board and supporting, and you know, and we love what it's happening. You know what I mean? And it's true. I think, especially in this country, when the majority of the people are women, right? There's no excuse. I mean,
not even the country, our industry. Our industry is 65%, 70% women.
Right.
You know?
So
that's the reason that you guys go to hair shows, because you know it's going to be full of women.
Oh, not, we're just a bunch of old married dudes now, Chris. We got none of that.
That would be, I think, a great podcast to do as well, to put like three or five women together. Like a round table.
Are you in?
Are you in?
Yeah, I'm in. If you do that, I'm totally in.
That's amazing.
And I know Vivian would be, and I could say 100% probably that Ruth Roach would be in, and Antoinette Binders, and
Now the hard part is getting us all together one spot.
We may have to go on a vacation together somewhere and do it there. I don't know. But it's up to you guys to make it happen. It is an opportunity. Cool. I like it. They did a fist bump for that. So,
Chris, actually, before we move on, I kind of want to, do you think, and I have a feeling that, and I feel a woman's movement in our industry. And again, I don't know if the word is, I attribute it again to social media, right? Because what social media does is it only focuses on why you're great, you know? And this big woman's movement, I think, is being, even if you look at how it's being organized, it's all being organized through social media. You know, I think it's kind of removing all the friction and just letting the cream rise to the top.
I agree with you, and it's such an incredibly strong voice that and the fastest method of getting something out, and the biggest bonus is it's free.
At least for now, right?
Don't tell anyone.
All right, let's get back to Chris. Should we get back to Chris?
Let's get back to
Chris. So how so you are credited with creating the whole ombre looks and crazes and stuff like what
the whole ombre movement.
Yeah, the whole ombre movement, right? Like and how, honestly, I mean, how it's even evolved in the last 5 years is amazing. You know, it's like it is what we're seeing on Instagram and stuff. What sparked you? What was that? Tell me the first day that you were like, oh, I've got an idea. How did that evolve?
Yeah, that was 1985. And I had been in and out of hospital for, 1986. I'd been in and out of hospital for almost a year. And cut a long story short, I decided that if I had to do another set of highlights, I was going to shoot myself, because I found it incredibly unnatural as a look. Depending, of course, on how it's done, who does it, and so on, it can look absolutely amazing. but my version, I was not impressed with. I was very bored. So I decided I was going to leave hairdressing, and I went into, I did interior design of hair salons for Weller for 4 years. And during that time, because I was constantly in a salon, I realized that, oh no, I'm on the wrong side of these chairs. I need to not be measuring, I need to be doing. And however, I was saying to Trevor, I said, you know, I have to come up with something in hair color because I'm so bored. And he said, thank God for that, because then you can start doing the color on my models and make them look different. So I took myself off to a studio. And at the same time, we had a cat at home called Sweetness. And Sweetness had long hair. And one day I was like looking through his fur, and I thought, that's it. I'm going to make hair look like fur. Not in a literal sense, but if fur is something that God created, then why did he create us so boring in the hair department? We're all one color. Obviously, it's a canvas for me to play with. So I decided I was going to make hair look like fur. So cut a long story short, a lot of nights, a lot of tubes and bottles of color and a lot of hair pieces and a lot that was trashed. But I definitely knew I was onto something. I just needed to find a way of how to do this seamless blend like Sweetness was wearing. So eventually I did it. And then when I went to do that show, Hair Color USA, that was what I presented on stage. So I didn't even do it on a model. I did it on a weft of hair that was stuck to a board. And I demonstrated how to do it. But I also had a pre-done hairpiece that I'd put into a girl's hair to actually show it. And that was the very first time that this was ever seen. And it was crazy what response we got. However, in saying that, everyone said to me, you're crazy. No one is going to want to wear roots. Everyone's trying to cover them up. Who wants five different colors in their hair? And so on and so on and so on. So there was a lot of doubt there. You know, there was, am I kidding myself that this looks beautiful? Or does it really look beautiful? And, you know, in comes Trevor and said, you know, that is amazing. So we, you know, I continued down that avenue of color.
Obviously, you had no idea that you were about to just totally influence and change our industry with that. Because today, I mean, you can see it even evolve today, but it's still live and present right now.
David, it's a method of application and having an eye for the colors that you want to put side by side, but seamlessly. And we're surrounded by it in nature. We're surrounded by it in leaves and petals and animals and all of the above. Nothing is one solid color. So why we were coloring hair to be either one solid color or highlights, this is why I got so bored. But no, I had no idea what was going to happen. And it was a 20-year overnight success. Because now, you know, there's countries that I have never been to. And hairdressers are making a lot of money out of learning how to do that technique. And that's where I feel that I really have made a mark on the industry. And it's not from an ego standpoint. It's just that, thank goodness, I could give something to our industry to stretch people's creativity, imagination, and to give clients something that they can't do it at home. You know, they tried it and it turned out die, and that lasted 10 minutes. But, you know, it's endless what you can do with that type of application. And if it's done beautifully, it can be as subtle or as it can be as wild as your client is wanting to wear. And how lovely that we really can give our clients what they want. Like, for example, I'm a blonde on the inside. But if I had blonde next to my skin tone, I'd look dead. So by putting the darkness underneath it, because of course I'm prematurely 99% gray, but by putting the dark between the blonde and my skin tone, it works for me. So it's expanding our services to a point where we literally can give clients anything and everything that they want, providing they take our advice, providing they listen to how a hairstylist is going to speak to them from a point of view of suitability, of beauty, or because let's face it, there's not many people in the world that want to be screaming and, you know, maybe 16, 17 year olds. But when it comes to making a business behind our chair, which obviously we all need to get even more serious about, you know, utilize these tools that you have, you know, come for education, bring education to the salon, whatever it takes, but don't feel that you can't do bigger and better, regardless of where we live, regardless, because often I hear that as an excuse. Well, I'm in Boise, you know, hell, doesn't matter. Boise's got tons of fun people in it. You know, and that's why education is totally the way to be inspired, to be motivated, to be able to have a shoulder to cry on, to be able to practice things and not use our clients as practice blocks. That's what my mannequin has for.
Practice that. I mean, she's been staring at me there the whole time. I mean,
oh, she has. Wait, let me tip her down because she's really
yes, very much so.
Looks like your sister.
Yeah.
She might be
younger, because she doesn't have the gray.
So, Chris, tell us about your mannequin story.
See, because I keep mentioning her. It was interesting. I was walking through a Redken Academy. And I saw these incredible looks on the top shelf that were done by students. And the faces of these mannequin heads were awful. And their hair was knotted so it goes back at 45 degrees in the wrong direction and all of that. So I thought, like mannequin heads. I know, isn't it crazy? Little did I know what I was getting myself into. Because it's not cut and dried. It's thank God for my experience of wig making and eyelash making and all of the above. But my goal was to give stylists and students an opportunity to have a beautiful face to work on, which in itself is an inspiration, let's face it. So you could, you know, we could put the ugliest color or cut on this girl and she'd still look fabulous. Whereas you could get a face that maybe isn't quite what we're looking for and everything we do right. Looks like hell. So that was my inspiration. Then, of course, me being me, it's got to be the best that I can make within the realms of affordability, because obviously if you throw, you know, tons of money at something, you can make it absolutely incredible. But I wanted parameters so that people could afford it. So this girl, she's my, what I call color head, and her hair is 18 inches long and it's Indian hair. And the quality of it, I have to say, everyone that touches it are like, oh my God, I've never felt a mannequin head that has such beautiful hair. However, with Indian hair, as opposed to Chinese hair, it's not as strong as Chinese hair is. So you can't put bleach on her hair and leave her overnight. Just don't. Okay. So,
that'll be another dissolved story, right? Break
up. Oh yeah, I've been there, done it. Again, that was a first. But we treat her like a client. So whatever we would do to a client is what you could do to our mannequin heads. And again, that's a more realistic experience. The head is a full size head. It's not a tweeny head. The hair on, even on this color head, because we have another one that's longer, it's 22 inch, which is great for upstyling and for coloring for long-haired clients and having that sort of practice. But this one, even with 18 inches, you can practice up styling and dressing and doing beautiful red carpet waves and so on this length. And we did a project. We wanted to see how many haircuts we would get out of this head. And we got 7 haircuts. So how cheap is that? You know, because I didn't tell you the price yet. So currently she's $79 plus tax. And she's available on chrissorbi.com. And that's K-R-I-S-S-O-R-B-I-E.com.
That's awesome.
And yeah, so go to the site. We're actually currently in the throes of putting up a new website. So the images of the heads that are on the website, they're the last edition of the heads. But as soon as our new website goes up, then there'll be these faces.
How many mannequins do you have? Do you just have the 18 and the 22? And do the 18 and the 22, do they have the same face, or does the other one have another?
Yeah, they have the same face. They have the same beautiful, sparkly glass eyes, the same eyelashes. I know. I mean, they just look
great.
She's ready for a runway. Yeah. Can you see her eyelashes?
Wow. Yeah, absolutely.
Very impressed. Wow.
There you go. So
it makes it feel like a realistic when you're finished with whether you're coloring or cutting, it feels like an actual client.
And you have to
exactly, and right. You know, a lot of people use them to showcase and post on social media. So again, you know, you could do whatever you want to her, but it's really useful. And also on my website, if you want to have private mentoring, again, there's an opportunity on the website, chrissorbi.com. to sign up for that. And let me just explain a little bit of what I do in that respect, is literally customize a day, an hour, 2 days, whatever somebody signs up for, to exactly what they want. So it can be anything from, I was mentoring a guy for TED Talks one time, and but most of the time it is sort of about our industry. And whether you want to do finishing, whether you want to do upstyling, downstyling, coloring, anything. If you want to be a platform artist and you want some coaching, whatever it may be, session stylist work, you name it. And I love doing mentoring like that, because it literally is, sometimes somebody thinks that they know what they want. And then after the first hour, we're like, do you think it would be an idea if we kind of go in another direction right. first? Or, you know, you discover what somebody's greatness is, and they had no idea that they had that. Like me, for example, with my burnt off highlights as opposed to ombre. I had no idea.
And truly, I mean, obviously, you've done it all. So, you know, to have a mentor that's and not that you just done it all. I mean, you've been at the top and you're still at the top. You know what I mean? And it's to have a mentor that's still in it. You know what I mean?
I mean, what's great about Chris, at least what, you know, what we've kind of picked up on in this this podcast is, you know, she's not scared to be vulnerable. And I think what's missing most in our industry is you see all these great, again, Instagram posts and stuff, but it's the vulnerability under them. You know, nobody succeeds without failures. And, you know, Chris is
learning opportunities, not
learning right. opportunities. All right. Learning opportunities, not failures. Exactly. So,
actually, I like to be real, as you probably noticed. And I think failures is a perfect word, because that's what we're scared of most. That fear is a failure. And hey, listen, let's be transparent. Let's be realistic here. Let's not wrap it up in cotton. So, I think I probably have been through every fear that is involved with our industry. So make the most of it before I retire.
Retire. Retire?
Yeah, that's in about 35 years' time.
Awesome. Hey, Chris, is there any Instagram people that you follow that are totally inspirational to you?
About
1,800
of them.
That was such a... Wait, so we just went from real to 1,800. Come on, Chris.
I'm serious. I follow about 1,800 people because it's anytime I see something that presses my button, whatever subject it is, whether it's design, whether it's color, whether it's finishing, whether it's just the way that somebody speaks to me,
awesome,
I'll follow them. You know, I think I'm blessed to have a lot of followers, and I have no idea who half of these people are. I would love to know them, but I don't have enough time left on this earth to be able to meet all of them. But going back to your question, Sam Veer, I think, has really fantastic education. I love now that he's expanded it into showcasing other people that he follows. So I can't copy him now. So I got to come up with my own idea, damn it. But, you know, I have the utmost respect for people that respect others. And that doesn't always come across in our industry. And this is where I think if you can make somebody's day by following them and giving them, like, say, for example, I see a really beautiful hairstyle, a look that's been photographed, but the backdrop is so distracting that I'm trying to make the picture bigger to see what's on the salon floor, right, and stuff like that. You know, to those sort of people, I will send a little message and say, hey, you know, why don't you consider like a nice silver gray backdrop that's going to work for everything and invest in a ring light so that your person, your client looks amazing. So, you know, this is where we can, again, help other people, not just following them, but actually be constructive in helping them, guiding them, right? And
just engage with them,
I'm
right?
Sorry? Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't always have to have a dollar value to do something like that, to help somebody. I think I do a lot of voluntary work, and that's my, I think, most rewarding time is when I'm giving back to people that are worse off.
Chris, do you have a pen on you? Write this down. You ready?
I do. Where am I writing it?
Come on, you have a pen and no paper?
Yeah, no, we got it here. Okay. What am I writing down?
Guru, G-U-R-U. That's someone who I follow who I just think is doing stuff that's out of this world right now.
You know what?
No, you don't.
Follow them.
No, I don't know.
I don't? Do you know that I don't? Oh. No, I think I do. But, you know, that's the trouble that I don't remember your names, never mind who I'm following. Doubt.
Okay. You ready? You ready for the big question? This is the no BS question. Ooh. Hey, what's Chris Sorby absolutely obsessed with?
Today?
Go for it. Today.
Today, I'm obsessed with my garden.
Love it.
I'm obsessed with my garden, and I'm obsessed with trying to recreate the beautiful things that I see on flowers that are planted. But, you know, that I'm very, very honored to be in New York, in the middle of New York, in Soho, and have this little sanctuary where I do a lot of thinking. I'm out there every single day, whether it's raining or snowing or not. I still go outside to really appreciate what's around me. And I have to thank my late mother for giving me or instinctively passing on that love of nature, which she did. Her garden used to get incredible reviews in magazines and things like that. So she was always trying to interest me in it, and I had no interest in flowers. Mm-hmm. And now I think that's crazy, but I think we kind of have to grow up a little bit before we really appreciate nature and appreciate the incredible things in our lives and in general, what life has to offer.
You know, the best things in life is what we evolve into, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's so true. I visit a very delightful elderly man. I'm a doula for people in final stage of life. And it's an incredible honor to be with somebody that is dying or then does pass. And anyway, so I visit this guy and he teaches me that every single week. He's like, this isn't a rehearsal. And he's 90 and of fantastic sound mind. And it's so rewarding what he teaches me about the mistakes that he made in his life, but also the things that he has so much gratitude for, and how, you know, he's ready. He's ready to pass on. And we have such a good time. We laugh, we cry, everything. Yeah. I tell him off, he tells me off.
Yeah, wonderful.
That's fun.
Thank you so much, Miss Chris Sorby. It's wonderful.
It's been my pleasure. Amazing. And, you know, if when you post this, if you get any questions that come at you, please feel free to pass them on. I'd be delighted to answer anything.
That's awesome. Chris, thank you very much. Should we make it official?
Thank you.
Chris Sorby of Redken, thank you very, very much for joining us on Your Day Off. Hey, so there it is. Hey, this is a message that we've been trying to bring, I don't know, for the last couple of months, actually since we started the podcast. Hey, so if you like the podcast or if you find that it's useful, please, please, please leave us a review, a 5-star review on iTunes. Leave us a rating and a review.
But if you don't like it, forget about it.
Yeah, totally forget about this message. We also want to thank Sarah and Blaine from Pretty Gritty. Sarah and Blaine, they are a band out of Portland, Oregon, and we just want to thank them very much for allowing us to use their song, Pleased to Meet You, on our podcast. That's cool. I think you can find their music on iTunes.
Peace and hair grease.